Lou Panaki, who was a radio operator on the USS Bayfield, tells of a strange connection with a man who was swept overboard.
D plus two or three, we got a radio message for help from a PT boat. Now, what they did at Normandy, we also had, our ship was also, we had a PT boat following us constantly and in tow. Our ship was supposed to last 3 days on paper, and then it was supposed to be sunk. And the PT boat was there to take our admiral off and to transfer the flag onto another ship.
Say that again. Your ship was supposed...
Our ship on paper for the Normandy invasion planning was literally supposed to be sunk after 3 days. They just figured, all right, you're going to last maybe 3 days if everything goes well. Of course, they have to prepare for the worst. So this is 3 days. This is the PT boat. Is attached and is going to stay right with your ship, and when your ship gets hit, the admiral gets transferred, and then he goes on a ship that hasn't been hit, and his flag and his staff, whatever is necessary, that takes. I mean, it's a horrible thing, but it's the truth, because you have to plan for these things.
How does that make you feel?
It gives you a weird, but you're young.
Did they explain that to you?
You're young. We knew it. We knew it. But you're young, and you're full of piss and vinegar. At this point, we just wanted to get something done already because we were so patriotic, so enthusiastic about whipping the German, the Nazi at this point. And then we had done so much training up to this point. See, with the hell with this training, we know how good we are. We had the confidence, you know. And let's go. We know we can do it, you know. And it was like an avalanche. It just happened. And you just go. I can't say anything else for it. It you get caught up in it.
Okay, so you've got this PT boat.
Okay. How the PT boats came over. This squadron was out in the Pacific. This was Commander Buckley's squadron from the Pacific, from Corregidor. He's the one that got MacArthur off Corregidor.
Really?
His squadron. So because of this gigantic invasion, they brought that whole squadron over to Normandy. This was one of the boats that belonged to Commander Buckley's squadron.
Okay.
They called our ship, since ours was flagship, for assistance. That they're sinking, and he's broached on a reef, and they need help. This was D plus two or three. I don't know exactly. So real fast, we hustled up a crew, and two landing barges, the bigger ones that carry the tanks, were told, okay, we're going to go on the plan. This happened very fast.
Right.
He says, we're going to go to his assistance, and our plan is to pull alongside, and we're going to try and broach on each side and tie the PT boat up and bring it onto a safe shore, because it was laying off on an enemy shore. So, okay, we're heading over, and it's laying off of an enemy shore, what the hell can I say, 200-300 yards, and it's broached, and it's just a skipper. Everybody else, he told them to get off, because they were rescued by other PT boats. But the skipper wouldn't leave the boat. He's sitting on a bow, and it's sitting like that, only the bow, and he's got a Navy machine gun in his lap, wiry little guy, you know? And we see him sitting there, saying, my God, you know, so we pulled up, but I can understand why he stayed with his boat. You see, during that time, you hung on to your equipment like it was something special. Now, if he knew if he lost his boat, he was a JG, a lieutenant junior grade. If he lost his boat, he would end up being a subordinate somewhere else. It might, God knows how long before he would get another boat. So he's staying with his boat. And he was a wiry little guy. I admired him, I remember. So we pulled up on each side real fast. We tied up. And then from the distance, the Nevada, battleship Nevada, was lobbing shells in to cover this rescue, to, you know, keep them down. Anyhow, we tied up real fast, and then we, full power on both mm-hmm. landing crafts, we pulled out, and naturally under the force of the full power, his boat came up uh-huh. a little bit. We were able to back him off the reef, and we brought him over, if I had to take a guess, maybe a mile and a half,
uh-huh.
onto a secure beach,
right.
our friendly beach. So we're coming over, everything is going pretty good. We're coming over to our beach. Just so happened, believe me, I'm not making this, one of our planes had been shot down. This plane is going down. I see the pilot is parachuting right. He's heading right for the beach that,
uh-huh.
that we're heading for. This is all adding to this picture. This is uh-huh. this is my the strangest day that I ever had. Anyhow, we broached his PT boat. We backed off. In the distance, this pilot landed, and we know he was hit and whatnot. And all the confusion of this beach and what's happening, we backed off, and then we're heading back. Now, of course, this took us quite a bit of time. On our way back, we're heading back, an LST loaded with the wounded hits a mine, blows up in the distance. We picked up about 6 survivors, and other landing barges picked up some of them.
Uh-huh.
Now, we're still ready. Because we have to get back. So we're heading back to our ship, and we get hailed by the Nevada.
As uh-huh.
Of course, we had to pass the Nevada to get to our ship. And they hailed us, and we went over, and they said we had a man overboard to take a look. So, and the seas were getting a little rough, so we made 2 passes around the battleship Nevada, and we went like this, can't find anything. And then we said, we have to uh-huh. leave. So they said, okay, thank you, you know. So we thought nothing of this. So we went back. We went back to our ship. Now, they were concerned because we were gone quite some time. So I get aboard ship. I said, they said, where the hell were you guys? You know, we were. We thought maybe you guys got in trouble. We thought maybe, you know, something happened to you. So then we said, well, no, we made the rescue, and then the Nevada called us over. They had uh-huh. a man overboard now, off a battleship, man overboard. It was a strange thing. I don't even know what made me ask. Believe me, to uh-huh. this day, I don't know. I said to the radio operator, a friend of mine, I says, there's a man overboard. And I says, next time you're talking to them by radio, and in the confusion of this uh-huh. thing, why the hell would you even ask a stupid question?
Sure.
I said, ask them, where were the guys from? Because you always, in the service, you always, where's it from,
uh-huh.
sort of thing, you know? Ask him where he's from and what's his name. So that night, I'm having a sandwich in the mess hall. He says, "Hey Lou," he says that guy off the Nevada. He says the guy's from Jersey, from Carteret. His name is Duffy. I said, "Oh my God!" You know, just like that, just hit me. I knew the kid because I had gone to the grade school with him.
Uh-huh.
Of course, he didn't go to high school, but I knew the kid. He said, "John Duffy." I felt weird, strange. It was just crazy. And, oh, what a pity! But what happened in his case? He was. They lowered a gangway, and whenever any small boats came alongside for any reason to the uh-huh. Nevada, it was his job to guide that boat in. And what uh-huh. happened? The seas got rough, and it hit him, slammed him up against the ship, and he slid under and must have slipped out of his life jacket. But the seas were too rough. We never found him. Now, this is a strange part of the story. Now, of course, after the Battle of the invasion of Normandy, we had Southern France, uh-huh. Iwo Jima, Okinawa, and this. Now we're talking years. And then I got discharged,
uh-huh.
and I went back to my job as uh-huh. timekeeper down U.S. Metals. So this is 2 or 3 years after the war.
Uh-huh.
We're doing payroll, and this one man comes into the office. Scotty, I knew this boy's family.
Uh-huh.
They lived on Chrome Avenue. There's a row of company homes. But you never spoke about anybody, especially when someone was killed in service uh-huh. or missing or anything. And I knew that this was his father. He was a little man. We call him Scotty. Very good-natured individual. He had 2 sons, and his wife was an invalid. She was uh-huh. crippled. She had a back problem. Mm. the typical, you know, you felt bad about it. I knew they lost a son, but I never, I never struck up a conversation regarding it. Until he asked a friend of mine, who he happened to be on that payroll, he says, the friend asked him, where are you going, Scott? He said, oh, I'm going on vacation in 2 weeks. So, okay, he gave him the slip to get his money. And as he left the office, this friend of mine, Dan Donovan, he was in Guadalcanal during, this, during the war. He says, hey, Lou, he says, you know where that guy's going? Where Scotty's going? I said, no. Yeah, he says, he went there last year. He's going there again this year. He's taking his vacation. He's going to England. Then he's going to take the ferry over to France. And he's going to start going from hospital to hospital and different churches. He's going to go look for his son. I said, oh, my God. You know? I says, you mean he doesn't know what happened to... He says, no, all he got was a missing in action. A telegram from the Navy. I said, oh, my God. So I stopped everything. And it, all of a sudden, I got this picture in my mind. You know? I ran out, and outside the plant, I caught him at the railroad tracks as he was crossing over. I said, Scotty, I don't even hate to talk about it because it upsets me sometimes. I said, Scotty, I says, you're going on vacation. He says, yeah. I said, you lost a son during World War II. Now this is, like I say, this is 3 years or 4 years
after the war.
After the incident. Because Normandy was in June 6, 44. So this is after. I says, you lost a son in Normandy. He says, yeah. I says, your son was on the Nevada. He looks at me real strange. He says, how do you know? I says, Scotty, I says, they never said anything? No, I says, just got missing in action. And it was hard for him to talk, you know? Scotty, I said, I don't know how to tell you. I was there. I says, I know what happened. And I told him the story. And Jesus Christ, it's still, I couldn't talk. I couldn't relate the story for years. And all of a sudden, it just came out this one time. And I felt every single emotion that this man felt. It upset me. And he was elated, relieved, just knowing. See, a person doesn't know when you get a missing in action what that does. It would take a serviceman that's had some experience about something like this. And this little man with his little banty legs, he turned and he jogged all the way home, across the field from the plant and the company houses. And of course, he never took his vacation.
Did you talk to him after that?
Not really. Not really, because it upset me, you know, because what I read in his face was... it was just too much.